Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. What if you could learn how to heal your injuries, pain, or illnesses using only the power of your mind? Well, my guest today, Brandi Gilmore, is going to address just how powerful our minds really are and how it can be accessed to aid in our self-healing. Brandi is a world-renowned mind-body healing expert, award-winning podcast host, and a TEDx speaker who is at the cutting edge of alternative health and self-healing. Brandi's journey into self-healing began in a pivotal moment at her sister's wedding in July 2005, where she longed to walk unaided down the aisle, but found herself confined to a wheelchair. Exploring both conventional and alternative therapies, Brandi delved into the power of the mind. Through years of dedicated research and experimentation, she made astounding discoveries that led to her full recovery and a newfound strength. Brandi has been featured in award-winning documentaries and several docuseries. Her clients include top celebrities and Olympic athletes. We're excited to have Brandi with us today to discuss self-healing, personal transformation, and her book, Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body. You can be your own cure. Brandi, welcome to our show.
Graham, it is so wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. You know, I know you experienced an unexpected event that left you disabled and desperately searching for answers to heal. As we start our show today, can you share with our audience about this event and its impact on your mobility and on your life?
Absolutely. You know, I basically was living a very full life. I used to be very athletic and I was used to do network engineering and operations. And basically I had a car accident that already, you know, messed up my back. And so then I had back pain and whatnot and was challenged with that, but still living a full life. And then basically I had a fall and I fell just right, just wrong, however you want to say it, but it wasn't good. And I ended up in all of this just extreme pain. And basically it continued to get worse instead of better. And basically that was my life. I mean, I went from living a full life to wheelchair walker cane. And after that happened, my doctor said, you know, don't move, made it as still as possible. And so I didn't move much. And then the less I did move, the more I could move. I mean, it was just I just got into a really bad cycle with extreme pain, so much so you could even just touch my skin and it would burn. Yeah.
I know they diagnosed you, it seemed like, with a couple of things, but they diagnosed you with CRPS, chronic regional pain syndrome. Give our audience a sense of how serious this really is.
All right. So I'm going to speak to this. And, you know, I have to say carefully, there is a feeling where some people will have like a pride in hardship where they say, okay, you know, if somebody goes, oh, I went through this horrible thing. Or one person might say to somebody, you know, oh, I had a bad day. And somebody else might say, oh, you think that was bad? Let me tell you about my day. So I'm really careful to not tell people how horrible it was because I don't want to win at having the worst thing in the world.
I get it.
And so, like, as silly as it may sound, if the brain wants to win at having the worst thing, it will. So
it will.
I can simply say that it felt like razor blades going through my nerves and literally you could touch some of my like skin and it would burn. And my physical therapist, she would actually come over to my house and she would take like kinesio tape and try to tape me from the base of my neck all the way in down to my ankles in all of these different patterns to try to lightly lift my skin off of my, I was in extreme pain, sometimes so much I didn't even want to breathe because then I would breathe and it would hurt more. And it was a lot. And then not only that, but then my nerves or the wrong muscles weren't firing. Certain muscle groups stopped firing. And then so I had all this weakness. And then I ended up with I was a mess. And then spinal end plate fractures and yada, yada. It was hard. It was really hard.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And I like the idea of, you know, we're not going to, you know, say who has the worst pain. But I know that in the United States, less than 200,000 people per year get diagnosed with this. And, you know, the research says that treatment can help, but this condition cannot be cured. And in fact, CRPS is known as the world's most painful incurable condition. And in the United States, they refer to it as a suicide disease. as it can lead, you know, those that have it to resort to suicide as the only means to escape this huge pain. So again, not to compare pain, but this was really a significant experience for you.
It definitely was. And I was there where I was in a place where I didn't want to live. So I was there. I get it. And the more I read about it, the more I didn't want to know. And, you know, from a place of compassion, echoing your words, you know, when you're in pain, even if it's neck pain or shoulder pain or back pain or any pain, it feels like it can suck the life out of you, you know, no matter if it's the worst pain in the world or not or what. Yeah, it's just in your energy and fatigue. It's just all of that. So just kind of anybody who's going through pain. And the reason I say that is because it was one thing that I was started looking at going through my injury is that 1.5 billion people live with chronic pain. And that's what I thought. I thought, well, if there are 1.5 billion people who are in pain, how am I ever going to get out of pain? And that was discouraging.
I can't imagine. It had to be a sense of hopelessness. In fact, you got a little bit of a ray of hope with a new protocol that was coming down, and you actually went to the appointment. The doctor walks in the room and he says to you, I don't think you're going to be able to qualify for this because what you have can't be cured. I can't imagine how exciting it must have been to go to the appointment and have him walk in and in a solemn way say, I'm sorry. But that seemed to be the catalyst to you, for you to kind of unlock the sense of, hey, you were saying, hey, don't, I hope I don't get the placebo. But there was something in that, even after you heard that you couldn't be a candidate for that procedure, it began to get you to think, what if I could maybe look at some other research that could unlock the mystery of maybe the body having an innate healing ability to maybe even fully recover and maybe even transform your life? Walk us through that process.
Absolutely. You know, after that study, I was really in a place where I was, you know, what's the point in living?
Yes.
And I had this thought or voice come into my head that was just like, well, what about the placebo?
Yes.
And as I thought about it, it was exactly that. I was like, okay, well, if there's a known fact that this fake pill can somehow affect the physical body. And then what was really pivotal is that the more I started researching, the more I started finding a lot of things that didn't make sense. And I think a lot of people just steer clear of that. They avoid those things. But I started looking at it and saying, multiple personality disorder. The awareness that people with multiple personalities can have different pain or different ailments or illness or asthma in one personality. Yeah, and not another. I said, well, wait a second here. This doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. They can even have different, you know, languages. They can have different accents and they can have different pain experiences. So you got into this and you were trying to figure out what might make the placebo work. How can, and maybe even how can we channel this potential. What did you specifically come to learn and appreciate in your research around the placebo effect?
Multiple things. I mean, initially I thought, okay, well, I'm going to force myself to believe that I'm already healed. And I really worked hard at it. I mean, so much so that I had like multiple realities. And in both realities, all realities, I was still really in pain. And so it wasn't working. And then I came across something called the open label placebo, which is exactly like it sounds, open label. So both the doctor and the patient both know it's a fake pill and it still could work. And I thought,
is that right?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Like the first study was done, I want to say was it the 60s or the 50s from Johns Hopkins, researchers at Johns Hopkins. And there's been a lot of studies since then with the open label placebo. And then also I started thinking, okay, well, definitely it's not about belief. And then the more that I researched the placebo, there were other things like, you know, there were things that like the awareness that depending upon the doctor-patient relationship, that could influence the placebo. And so there were just more things. The more I started researching, the more it seemed like it clearly was not all about belief.
Yeah, it wasn't just about belief. There was something about being able to channel some things, maybe even an emotional vitality that you talk about. Let me kind of frame this part. And you worked with a doctor, Dr. Hillary Smith, in advanced thermography, where intense areas of heat and inflammation can be monitored. And with what her scanning was doing, she was able to scan things once every second, revealing where the pain is and how it's being experienced. And you found ultimately that the folks that you were working with, then in under 5 minutes, sometimes even less, there can be a significant reduction in one's pain. Walk us through what were you noticing and what were these thermography scans showing?
Absolutely. So basically, after I healed myself, I thought people are going to think this is crazy that I can somehow go from this state to healing myself. And I wanted to show people. I thought nobody's going to believe we can heal with our minds because it doesn't seem realistic, or at least it didn't to me at the time.
Yeah.
You know, my injury was now over 20 years ago now. So I thought, I want to show this. And so what I started doing was showing it under medical thermography. And I worked with Dr. Hillary Smith. And basically, medical thermography, the easiest way to describe it is through thermal, you know, so heat. If anybody's ever had like a sprained ankle or an infection, and you notice there's heat coming from the body, that's what medical thermal imaging does, is it picks up on this heat. And so if somebody's experiencing, let's say, neck pain, under this scan, what happens is their whole neck area is like bright red with it showing the pain. And so I just show people how to use their mind. And as they shift their mindset, the scan in real time goes from red to green as their pain goes away. So they might start with a level 6 of neck pain, and then I'm showing them how to use their mind. And what I do is I help them to identify the specific emotions that they're feeling and help them to shift these specific emotions. And as I am, you literally see the scan turn from red to green. And I say, well, what's your level of pain now? And they say, oh my gosh, my pain is gone. And they did it, not me, but it's from shifting their mindset.
How long did you research this for? And as you began to put your protocol together, how long did that whole process take until you found yourself being able to heal yourself?
I'm going to say a couple of things. First and foremost, when you're in the state that I was at the time, one day ran into the next. I didn't sleep very well, and you don't really care what day it is. You don't really actually want to know. You notice people around you, their kids are growing up and whatnot, and everybody else is kind of going on with life, and you're kind of stuck for you. So I was about 6.5 years injured, and through that time, I studied diet and supplements and binaural beats and theta state. Yeah. I mean, and there was just so many different, you know, I had been meditating for like 5 years or something, and it didn't work. And so there was all of these things that I did along the way. And I would say I got good at finding the solution because I did a ton of things that didn't work. So about 6 years studying, 5.5, 6 years, somewhere. It's hard to put an exact time.
So all those things, binaural beats, meditation, you know, all the things you're describing doing, these are typically ways that we find that can be effective. But you were focusing more on the emotions. May I ask, what kind of emotions did you find yourself recognizing that maybe you hadn't seen in yourself before that might have been related to, or could have been related to, what you were experiencing that you began to learn how to release?
You know, what I realized is I had a strong feeling of fear of dying and also wanting to die and expecting to die. And it was from 9/11. So the events of 9/11 triggered me in a way that I didn't even realize. And I was really, really good at suppressing my emotions. So I worked in technology. And if you had asked me if I had any emotions, I mean, I would have said, I don't have any emotions.
Emotions, how do you spell that?
Yeah, what are those? No, like I might have it like 6 or 7 times a day. But other than that, I'm, I mean, I felt like I was happy. I go through life, I had friends, I felt like life was good. I was always positive, always optimistic, determined. I didn't know I had fear, and which may sound silly. But then what's interesting is that then I went from this feeling of expecting / wanting to die and having all this fear to then having this injury that then also made me want to die also. And that's kind of the point of it all, is that, you know, I started looking at Freud's work and things like repetition, compulsion, or reenactments. And when we stop and think about how the brain works, we have patterned ways of thinking and feeling. You know, somebody might have a pattern of criticism from growing up as a child, or a pattern of guilt, or a pattern of shame, or whatever it is, you know, or even if we think about a scenario where a woman has an abusive father and leaves him and finds the abusive boyfriend, boss, spouse, et cetera, you know, that pattern continues. And so what happens all of the time is we have these emotional patterns that we don't realize impact us. So technically I had my injury, and then I also, I mean, there was 9/11, but that put a feeling of fear of expecting, wanting to die. Then I also had this injury that then amplified the feelings of expecting, wanting to, there was all of these emotions that I was suppressing.
We'll be right back after word from our sponsor.
Continuing education is both a requirement and a learning opportunity, but finding the right CE provider can be challenging. AATBS, a Triad company, offers continuing education for psychologists, social workers, marriage and family therapists, counselors, and behavior analysts. CE courses are available both individually and as part of our new All Access Pass. All Access Pass provides a library of over 250 unique courses. That's more than 800 hours of CEs, with new courses being added every month. As a special offer, Behavioral Health Today listeners can save 15% on CE purchases. Visit us at aatbs.com/BHT and enter promo code BHT15 during checkout. That's aatbs.com/BHT. Check out our library and check off your CE requirements today.
Yeah, I think that's really a great reminder. You know, we create neural pathways by repeated behaviors, by repeated thoughts, by repeated, you know, feelings. There are literally neural pathways that we create and we don't know we're doing it, but that becomes like a very deeply entrenched, furrowed row that we go down just naturally. You know, it's like the old country truck that goes down that same lane 100 times or more, and it kind of drives itself. It just automatically goes there. But you started to recognize that emotional vitality is kind of the missing link here to our health. In fact, in your TED talk, which I really encourage our listeners to watch, it's a really dynamic talk. And your whole process of the way you come out on stage, the way you exit afterwards is really good. But you found that this emotional vitality, even when we look at other diseases like heart disease, for example, we can, if you can manage that, we can reduce our heart disease by half. And then kind of humorously, you talk about when we get into this emotional vitality, it's like feelings with benefits. It's like friends with benefits, but much less complicated. That was a classic line. That was so good. But these emotions, actually, if we can harness these, actually have some really great benefits, don't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, like you were saying with the analogy of the truck going through the path, yeah. It's all about, yeah, bringing in these positive emotions and also turning them into neural pathways. And so a lot of times what people are overlooking is they say, well, I'm going to just think positive, which would be like going through this field of grass a bunch of different ways every day, and you never really create a path. And so part of creating that change is creating new positive neural pathways. So it becomes automatic, and that's when it becomes easy. And kind of building on this point of exactly that, of optimism. And when we think about cutting heart disease in half, I mean, the number one cause of death is heart disease. When we stop and think about it, that's profound. And further, you know, even post-operative research studies, you know, studies with somebody who's after surgery, if somebody's in a state of optimism, research has shown that they can heal faster, improved cellular proliferation, improved recovery. But if they're in fear and negativity, as you know, there's slower healing time, slower cellular proliferation, and healing results, increased chance of rehospitalization. I mean, all kinds of things just from our emotions.
Yeah. We even know, to add on top of that, we know that there are other environmental and relational things that can impact that. The mood and the affect of the staff and doctors coming in to treat the person, the color of the paint on the wall, and whether someone has a window room in their hospital recovery or not. These things all relate to our mood being enhanced and our emotions. So you help folks identify combinations of emotions and you teach them how to release them and kind of turning this chronic pain into what you would describe as chronic gain. The removal of this pain seems to open up a space for other more positive things to come in. Tell us about how you help folks identify their combinations of emotions.
Absolutely. You know, as far as identifying, there are a lot of ways to do it, but I think a more simple way to look at it is this, is that our bodies are actually kind of practical. And for example, if somebody's having issues with their eyesight, a lot of times they have stress around something they're seeing or something that they don't want to see or hearing, you know, something around their ears. And so what can happen is that different body parts can relate to different emotions. And so that's one way to start to look at it. And for me personally, one of the things that I did was this, is I said, okay, well, there's an issue with my nervous system. And by the way, there's metaphysics, a woman who spoke on metaphysics in the early 1900s, Florence Scovel Shinn, and she actually said, okay, well, as far as the eyes must mean, you know, what you're stressed about seeing. And so that was, I mean, I was researching everything from neuroscience to quantum physics to metaphysics to the Bible. I mean, literally everything.
All the way to Freud.
Right. All the way to Freud. I mean, everything. And so what I started doing is I said, okay, my nervous system, why is my nervous system so fired up? My nervous system is having a very extreme abnormal response. And I thought, okay, well, fight, flight, freeze. What is going on with my nervous system? And so I started looking at fears and looking, and then it led me down this path of understanding that I had a pattern of fear. Now, if you had asked me if I was in fear, I would have said you were nuts. I would have said, of course not. Like, I'm fine. It was just really ingrained.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find as you work with folks that there might be typical emotional patterns or combinations of emotions that might even relate to specific disorders that you help them address?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And basically how I started to look at it was like this is, you know, going back to the example of multiple personality, or it's also called dissociative identity disorder. But
yes,
in that situation, you can have a person who has pain or illness in some personalities, but also can have completely healthy personalities.
Mm.
And that was interesting. Another thing was interesting is that there can be people who have PTSD, so have extreme stress, who aren't sick. And yet there could be people with less stress who are sick. So it wasn't just like a black and white type of situation. And what I started to realize is that it depended on the combination of emotions. And a simple way to think about it is, you know, the analogy I use all the time is, you know, if you have flour, then you can't make cake. But if you have flour and you mix it with eggs and butter and other ingredients, or vegan eggs and butter and other ingredients, whatnot, you end up with cake. You can make cake. And so, of course, different ingredients create different recipes. And so what I've found is it's really about identifying what specific emotion is affected to which part of the body. So a lot of times, even like the back, for instance, it can have to do, you know, with feeling supported or unsupported, or feeling stressed about money, because money is a support in life, or even sometimes it'll be having like anger towards those who support us. So I'll see people who are feeling angry towards their spouse or guilty towards them. And so what we'll have to do a lot of times with that in some way. And so, yeah, just different emotions with different illnesses I see all the time.
I really like that. I can see where you might be able to even assess, you know, maybe pre-morbid personality types, you know, of one's kind of leaning towards, you know, certain characteristics of kind of a characterological way of being in the world, or like you're saying, emotions that one might be harboring that they're not even aware of. And I think a lot of times, you know, we're not aware of our emotions. We're aware of pain, but we're not aware of tension. A lot of times the tension that builds is things building up emotionally and otherwise, and then we just have a, you know, an outburst of pain or an outburst of our emotions in difficult ways, or trauma, you know, because, you know, we know that trauma gets stored in the body. So all of these things make a lot of sense.
What's also a little confusing, yeah, is that for some people, they may feel happy in life and then simultaneously feel guilty for it, or like they don't deserve to be. And so then they can be extremely happy. And like, I've had people say, I'm the happiest terminal person you could ever imagine. And so there's that. Or it's a little tricky, because also sometimes what happens is somebody can be happy and their self-image can get it linked up that they're a sick person. So maybe they've had illness for many, many, many years. And so the way they see themselves is just as somebody who's sick. And so it's a bit tricky. So I don't want to make it sound like it's just like, hey, you release an emotion and everything's going to be great. But it really is also that as well. I mean, it's amazing, and it does take an understanding.
Yeah, I think that's a really great reminder that it's not just an emotional release and, you know, kind of a cathartic experience. It's much more layered and probably nuanced than that, which is an important piece to this. And also, it over time becomes our identity, doesn't it? If we're in chronic pain, this is not just what's happened to me. This becomes now who I am. And that's a whole nother layer. As you begin to help folks with their kind of, you know, transformation here, and you kind of join them in this healing journey, What are some of the steps that you'd take initially to get folks started even to think this way and get the program started?
You know, a lot of times what I really main focus is going towards positivity first and also feeling like you deserve to have a great life, because those things can get stuck. The other thing is if we know that negativity affects the body or painful emotions, and you may not know what's there because, of course, it's the subconscious mind. So it's subconscious. So I'm even going through my injury, I was like, well, I'm certain I don't have anything in my subconscious mind. But then the logical part of me was thinking, okay, well, I can't be certain because it's subconscious.
I can't be aware of it, right?
Exactly. Like it's impossible.
Right. It's like asking somebody if they're delusional. Yeah.
Exactly. So a lot of times, basically making sure to build up the positive first, because knowing if negative emotions are affecting your health, the last thing you want to do is delve right into a negative emotion.
Yeah. Right. So you're kind of prepping them to kind of become a little bit more introspective and maybe even question some things that maybe haven't even realized it could be there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And set up new positive neural pathways. The other thing is that also even in the release process, I actually call my release process reverse release process, because it's exactly opposite of what most people do. And most people, when they have some type of emotional trauma or negativity that they want to get rid of, they either look directly at the problem or they'll go back to childhood and start looking at the pattern. But there's a few reasons that I don't do this. And one is because this is that, you know, if I use a simple example, and if I say, okay, well, let's say a woman was cheated on by her ex-husband and she's mad and she's angry and she doesn't feel like she's ever going to have a relationship again and she's hurt. And you say, well, just let it go. Just let it go and resolve it. Well, that's nice. But if she doesn't really feel hopeful for the next thing, it's not really going to be realistic. But if instead you say, okay, well, I want you to start getting a vision of what it is that you do want and start feeling it and start bringing it in and start picturing that and getting that vision in your mind and bringing in even more hope and programming that in, not just like hopeful, but really programming the mind at a deeper level. And then you say to her, well, I want you to let go of these negative emotions so you can move forward. Now it's a lot easier and more practical for her to do. And so that's one thing. And another thing is also the awareness that emotions are also changing our consciousness. And I call it emotion-controlled consciousness or emotion-controlled perception. And what happens is, just like if we're really, really, really in love, what do we see in people? What do we see in that person that we love? We see all of the good. And if we're really hurt or upset or angry, what do we see? We see all of the negative. And so we fault find, and our brains do this on its own, you know, automatically. And so if we're in fear, we get stuck there. And so point being is that if somebody's in a negative emotion and they just keep looking at the negative emotion and just keep looking at the negative and analyzing the negative and analyzing the negative, they're not going to shift that consciousness. And so another thing that I love to have people do is shift their consciousness, so their brain's thinking in a different way.
It's interesting when you put it this way. You know, when we condition ourselves one way, little do we know, more times than not, that we're actually conditioning ourselves or our environmental situations and our just kind of maybe passive way of dealing with certain things. We're being conditioned, and those neural pathways that you mentioned earlier are being laid down. But the cool news is, given our neuroplasticity and the ability to recondition certain things, we can reprogram these things. We can create new pathways that become even more deeply furrowed than the other pathways that we've learned to live by. Now, the part of your journey that you take folks through includes what you describe as the GIFT, G-I-F-T, process of change. Walk us through just briefly this four-step kind of mind programming process and the positive aspects of this programming.
Absolutely. So with GIFT, it's an acronym. And so for G, it's about getting new positive mind programming. And so really getting it in, and not just like, you know, a vision. A vision's great, but it's also really about amplifying the emotions. Because as I mentioned, you know, with emotion-controlled consciousness, you know, if we feel a little bit in love with somebody or a little bit upset, it doesn't necessarily pull our consciousness in the same as if we amplify the emotion. So getting new positive mind programming is really about getting the new in, making it really strong. And then step I is all about identifying what is the problem. Like, what's the miswired mind programming that is going on? You know, identifying the negative. And then step F is about freeing yourself from it. So it's about freedom techniques and learning to release it. And then also not just release it, you know, it's also about repatterning the mind. And so the mind starts working and you understand why your mind's holding on to things. Yeah. And then letting it go. Just like in the beginning, I mentioned pride in hardship. So sometimes people can have, they have hardship, but they also feel pride about it. And so they want to get rid of it, but they have pride about it. So they want to get rid of it and they want to keep it simultaneously. And that's what happens with a lot of things in life, is that there's some reason that the mind is holding on to it. So that's step F. And then step T is stepping into the transformation, making it real, because genuine change is key for healing.
Yeah, it's really good. I trust along the way that this approach is in fact just that, a journey. And as you watch folks experience things along the way, what are some of the early maybe milestones that they're experiencing and you're seeing with them that begin to identify, hey, we're making some progress here?
I would say feeling happy, feeling happier, okay, feeling more lifted. One gentleman who went through my course, he described it. This is what he said. He said, "It may sound odd, but I always felt like life was full of a bunch of gnats where this thing goes wrong and that thing goes wrong and this, that, the other." And he said, "I just feel happier and I don't feel like every little thing is going wrong and this, that." It feels differently. So yeah. I would say that, but I see people make incredible changes, and not just with pain. I mean, I've seen people heal tumors or bedridden and running marathons. And I mean, it's incredible. So I would say everybody's situation is really different and really depends on embracing that change.
As you're talking about some of those cases, I know we're kind of winding down here for today, and we talked at the beginning of the show about having you back. I want to take our listeners into a little bit more of a deep dive later on in another show. But for right now, as we begin to wind down for today, share with us, I think your story is extraordinary. But I would love, maybe in addition to yours, share with us an extraordinary story of success with someone you've worked with that highlights the power of our minds.
Absolutely. You know, I love quantifiable stuff. I like to look at things that I like to see change. So one of my favorites is that I worked with a woman who had a tumor in her throat. And it had been there about 4 or 5 months. And she tried everything, and diet and detox and supplements. She wanted to get rid of it. She didn't want to have surgery. But finally, eventually, she said, "Okay, well, I have to get rid of it. It's still there." And so she scheduled surgery. She had another MRI. And the tumor was confirmed again. And it was 5 millimeters. And you could see it protruding from her throat. And they scheduled her. So the MRI was on Monday. They scheduled her on Friday for surgery. And her and I connected on Thursday as like a last ditch effort that we happened to connect. And so I helped her to shift her mindset, and the tumor was gone. And what she thought that it moved. I mean, it was like, okay, well, she figured, you know, obviously that can't happen. And so she went in for surgery the next day, and they got her all prepped for her surgery. And she's like, "But can you just check? Because it just doesn't feel like it's there." And they were like, "Well, I'm sure it's there. It was just confirmed. Don't worry." And so she asked the ENT right before, and she's like, "Can you just double check?" And he checked, and he was like, "I've never seen anything like this in my 30 years of working as an ENT. I can't operate on something that's not there." And he canceled her surgery.
Is that the story on your website of the video of this woman? Is that her?
Yeah, the one standing beside the hospital in tears. Right. Yeah.
That's so good. That is,
you know,
so
what's
good.
Funny? It all came full circle, because she used to own an imprint for Simon & Schuster, and she, that's what she had. And after that happened, she was like, "Brandy, you have to write your book." Right. And because this whole journey since I healed, I mean, I just wanted to show people that it's not just me, that we could all do it. And then I was asked to speak. And then next thing I know, I'm giving a TED talk. And then the next thing I know, I'm this. And it is just kind of unfolded. And then that was the unfoldment towards the book. And so it's been this journey of just really wanting everybody to know that we're all amazing. Thank you. Isn't it?
You know, it's a phenomenal journey, and it's accessible, it's doable, and we just maybe get a chance to learn how to do it. But I also know that folks don't have to have a chronic illness, you know, or be experiencing a disease process to start building a daily routine of gifting, for example, or developing a positive mindset, maybe almost in a preemptive, you know, preventative way. In other words, you know, we can get out in front of, you know, an illness process from even starting. As we wind up for today, leave our listeners
I just have to say, you're brilliant. You're beautiful. I love that you said that. So go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt, but.
No. I appreciate that. So leave our, because I get the same sense from you. Leave our listeners with a final message as we close today of how they can impact their health starting today with their power of their minds.
You know, number one, I want to echo what you brilliantly said is even being proactive, because research at Harvard has even shown that emotional vitality can help protect your body from illness. So that is, of course, on the optimistic side. And then on another side, it may or may not sound like impossible to heal with the mind. But the way I see it now is it's kind of like, imagine if somebody's walking around and they're having an anxiety attack and they don't know what's connected to emotions. Yeah. And they're having this panic attack, and they go, gosh, I've run all these tests and I'm doing all these things and I'm giving myself oxygen. And you go, well, you're having anxiety. If you just stop the anxiety, right, it would fix. And so we have these emotions that are affecting us covertly and we don't realize it, and they're there. And so I just would say we're all amazing. It's not that I'm amazing. Yes, I'm amazing. Yes, we're all amazing. And it's incredible what we're capable of.
You talk in your work about even starting with something like gratitude, just a daily gratitude. Keep it simple. It changes our physiology and the way and the way we move kind of through the world. You talk about even trying to laugh and smile more. You even kind of laugh with an audience member in your TED Talks when they start to smile back. And you talk about maybe some more positivity. All these things are so doable and they're accessible to us without having to, you know, develop big, long techniques. What are you grateful for? Maybe smile with somebody today. Exchange a smile or a laugh. These are the little things that we can do daily to bring about some really cool things. You know, so I would love for our listeners to learn more about you, Brandy, and your book, Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body. How can they learn more about you and learn more about your book?
Absolutely. Learning more about me, my website at brandygilmore.com. And what's really cool is you can see the video on there under thermography. So if part of your mind is saying, wow, this is impossible,
cool,
or, you know, so you can see it under video. It's cool, isn't it?
It's very, and it's real. This is kind of proof in the pudding. The medicine works, if you will. This approach works. Yep.
Yeah. So there's that. And then I just released my book. And so that's coming out. And I would say just delve in, like realize that we're all just truly amazing is really more than we realize.
Yeah. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. That's for sure. Well, Brandy, what a contribution, my goodness, you've made to the lives of everyone, both those in chronic pain and every one of us, to increase the quality and the positive experiences of our daily life. And we're going to have you back on the show to talk more about your book and kind of get an in-depth understanding of what one goes through to access these things to bring about this change. But for today, thanks so much for being with us. It's been great to have you on the show.
Graham, you are just lovely. And thank you so much for having me. And you're brilliant. And it's been a pleasure. And I look forward to coming back and connecting with you.
It's been my joy. I look forward to it as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
I also want to thank you, our listeners, for joining Brandy and me today. Before we wrap up, we have some exciting announcements. Mark your calendars for the upcoming Wellness Summit Series happening on March 23rd. The Wellness Summit Series is a one-day event featuring two heart-centered hypnotherapy experts, Kevin O'Neill and David Hartman, sharing their insights and techniques to harness the subconscious to help clients overcome trauma and reach their highest potential. To learn more and reserve your spot, you can register free at triadhq.com/WSS. That's triadhq.com/WSS. Also, you can find the Behavioral Health Today podcast on the Triad community. Come join our mental health community at hellotriad.com and connect with mental health professionals, share your insights, and engage in meaningful discussions. And lastly, I want to remind you that our episode archive and all of our resources for this episode can be found on our webpage at triadhq.com/BHT. Thanks again for being with us on the show, and look forward to having you back with us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.